The one in each ship.
What'd he say?
The packet. Oh.
Yeah, the English one I'll give out a little later if we'll see if we'll get to it. You can take it now if you like, but I don't know if we'll get to it.
Is everyone here that's coming? Or
no, Colin and Aaron should be coming.
Okay, so and, let's run to the back.
Possibly they might be coming with the others after.
Is Aaron coming?
No, his parents are in town.
So who are? Aaron's not here. Okay.
What about the other one?
Aaron's
Zach?
I forgot to remind you.
I reminded him, but he didn't come with you, probably.
Zach, can I just show me if you're standing to close the door behind you, if you don't
absolutely.
Mind?
No, I don't
mind. Thanks so much.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Okay. But just to review a few of the highlights of last week, the topic of our series here is a Monday night series that get together once a week is the Musa movement, and specifically at this point in time at least, and that'll take us again if we continue Ritz Hashem for the next I would say 2 months or so, would be Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He was the founder of the Musa movement. So what we pointed out last week, and we're basing ourselves on a text which is called Tnuat HaMusar, the Musa movement. We don't have yet an English translation. We're still looking for one. By Rav Dov Katz. And we're looking at volume one of a five-volume series. And this whole volume is dedicated to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the movement. And what we saw last week, and we went through it pretty much thoroughly, is chapter 19. And that's what we gave out last week as a photocopy. Tonight, we want to study chapter 20. Now, chapter 19 emphasizes the following points. Let's just review them. Point number one is that according to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, a concept called Yira, which means the fear of God, encompasses all of man. When I say all of man, I mean from head to toe and every single part of his dimension of his physical and spiritual reality. And therefore, it's so central that we understand Yira and what it means to fear God. Point number two is that in order to achieve Yira, to really study Yira, we have to study it first on a logical level as a part of Torah. And number two, we have to study Yira on a Musa level. Musa level means not just how I am. So you did make it, right? We had heard a rumor that you weren't coming tonight, so
I made it tonight.
Very good. Wow, that's great. So you have a photocopy of the handout over there on that part. Now, the study of Musar is going to be our way, our method of achieving Yira, of achieving this goal. Our overall goal is Yira, is fear of God. However, Rav Yisrael realizes that it's not enough to study Musar on an intellectual level. And the reason for that is because when you study something intellectually, it may impress you at certain points in time, but it doesn't necessarily penetrate into your very soul. And according to Rav Yisrael's philosophy, the soul of man is made up of what's called kochot kehim. And I'm not going to go over that right now because that was a full hour of last week, so we don't have time for that. But just to oversimplify it, the tip of the iceberg, kochot kehim are these basic human attributes.
They're powers?
It's kind of like powers. It's kind of like faculties. It's man's desire on the most natural level. You see, and again, we don't have an hour now as we did last week, but just to make it kind of a little bit simplified, Rabbi Yisrael doesn't see the allurement to evil, what we call the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, as something external to man. He sees that as something that's natural, that's built into man. Man is purely nitty-gritty. If you could strip him down to his natural state, he has a tremendous amount of desires, not just for physical pleasure, but even for honor, even for dignity. He has pleasures to want to be tops, and he wants to be on the the greatest. And it's a very self-centered kind of natural tendency because I exist as my own soul. So now we have these kochot kehim, and we have to figure out a way of penetrating into these kochot kehim, of making what he calls impressions. Impressions mean roshem. Remember that word roshem for last week. And to make a permanent roshem such that it penetrates into the nefesh and transforms the very nefesh, this very kochot kehim, which is the natural essence of the soul of man. So how do we penetrate into that? That's Rabbi Yisrael's question, as in his entire enterprise, his whole project in the Musar movement, is to try to figure out how we can successfully penetrate into the very soul of man, into these kochot kehim, and transform them, and just simply upgrade them, or inspire them, and change them in such a way that we'll always be able to make the right decisions that are based on Yira, based on the fear of God.
Aaron and I were trying to figure out what the exact translation of kehim is, because we couldn't find it in the dictionary.
Kehim are latent, L-A-T-E-N. And latent means something that's below the surface, it's concealed, it's not something that's obvious or revealed to the naked eye. And I believe in modern psychology, you would probably call it the subconscious of man. Now, again, in Freudian psychology, subconscious can mean many different things. If you use the term subconscious in Rav Salanta's frame of reference, what you're referring to is the natural soul of man. And the natural soul of man is really man himself. So, for example, on one level, you remember Rabbi Yisrael's mashal from last week, that on one level, if the fire breaks out, I'm going to go out and save my student because I'm in love with my student. My son has gone off the path, but yet, when I wake up from my dream, the first thing I do is try to see if I can save my son. The saving of my son is something that's so basic, so fundamental, down to the soul of man, to the we would call the bootstraps of man, that even though intellectually on one level, you know, I think that maybe this person should be saved and not this person, but I automatically move towards my son first. And that's an instinctual, almost latent kind of awareness of my son, a love for my son that transcends all the intellect. So all the intellect, you remember that we discussed last week, what would be Rav Yisrael's demands or his syllabus for the study of Torah? Do you remember that? You got to know everything. Rav Yisrael doesn't stop at anything. And he says in our time, what you would have called back in the day, let's say more sophisticated, advanced learning like Talmud, is for us like learning a Chumash, like learning the Pasuk in the Bible. And he says we have to know everything, we have to be able to know the Poskim and all that. But on the other hand, all that knowledge is somewhat external. And it doesn't necessarily penetrate into the Kochot Kehim to transform them. So the first program on the list of Rabbi Yisrael's programs, of his methodology, is going to be Shinun. Shinun means review. And Rabbi Yisrael says it's not enough to learn something once or twice, you've got to constantly review it. The more you review it, the more it penetrates into your very basic soul and has an impact, or what we call a roshem, and makes these grooves in your soul. It makes these impacts on your impressions on your soul. So that was the first element in his program. And that more or less took us to the end of chapter 19. And now we're starting chapter 20. So as I said last week, I'm going to try to read parts of it in Hebrew. Many of these parts were written by Rabbi Yisrael himself. The author here, Rabbi Dov Katz, was able to integrate his own presentation of Rabbi Yisrael together with Rabbi Yisrael's own writings. So like in one paragraph, sometimes you'll see half the paragraph is a quote from Rabbi Yisrael. The other half is Dov Katz just embellishing. And once we read the text of Rabbi Yisrael, which is usually from a book called Ar Yisrael. Ar Yisrael, if you remember from last week, is a collage of 24 letters that Rabbi Yisrael wrote to his students to try to gather that, to try to guide them during his lifetime. Those letters, plus another letter that he wrote to the entire world, which is called the Igeret HaMusar, which he presents his whole theory and philosophy of Musar. Those letters are written in what I call poetry. Now, when I say the word poetry, I use it in a very specific way. I don't mean that it has rhyme and you know, a certain number of stanzas and refrains. What I mean by poetry means it's the most sophisticated Hebrew, way beyond the modern Hebrew that we speak today, and that there'll be words that you and I, and I'm including myself here, will not understand. I don't know if anyone here has ever taken a course in poetry. I remember I took a course in college in poetry, and half of what we read I didn't understand. Just the English was just the murder. So Rabbi Yisrael, so that's what I'm going to try to do tonight. You know, I'm going to try to see what words of Rabbi Yisrael's pen we can understand. And again, we're going back into a time machine about 150 years ago. And in the first paragraph here, he tells you that Rabbi Yisrael understood the nature of that generation in which he lived. So let's say, for example, a lot of Rabbi Yisrael's work was in 1840, 1850, 1860. Rabbi Yisrael looked at his generation and he came to the following conclusion. It's not good. And he said that in order to counter what's not good, we need what's called extreme measures. And he said that even though Shinun, which is on the second line in the main paragraph, is very critical, Shinun meaning to review something over and over again until it penetrates, that is not sufficient. He says that Shinun would have been a means or a method that would have worked if we were in normal times. But we're living through unnormal times. And this is something that is fundamental to Rabbi Yisrael's ideology, that we live in a time in which the spiritual nature of man in this generation is way, way down. It's low down. He calls it in the fourth line, Adam Shakua Mibayit Umichutz. He says a person is completely Shakua means he's like sinking down, Be'avodato, in his work. He says that back in the day when the Jewish people the generation was on a very high level, all they needed to awaken them was to hear the shofar blowing in Elul and on Rosh Hashanah. That would have been enough La'orer esa'adam ishenosa, to awaken a person from his spiritual slumber, from Hevle Tirdosov, from all of his weights and pressures with this world, and then Lefakech al Masav, he would begin to re-examine and introspect his actions. But what should we do, says Rabbi Yisrael? He cries out in his famous work, Ar Yisrael, how do we combat the fact that Mushukayim Anachnu, we are now completely submerged in all of the Hevle Tevel, all of the this worldly and physical material pressures of life.
Is it like heaven?
Heaven, you say?
No, heaven, heaven.
Hevel, yeah. Vanities, the vanities.
Like we're immersed in like vanities.
We're dedicated to vanities. We don't have the time or the emotional energy to dedicate to spiritual matters. And the blowing of the shofar is not going to wake us up. We need some sort of more extreme method. And here is where he introduces a phrase, again, for those of you following the text inside, it's about 8 lines down from the top of this paragraph, Halev Mitum Tam. And I want you to underline those words, because Halev Mitum Tam means the following, that the heart, which represents those Kochos Keim that we spoke about, the inner soul, is Mitum Tam. Mitum Tam means it's full of dross, D-R-O-S-S, dross meaning filth or spiritual contamination. And the heart, instead of being soft and being pliable and waiting to be impacted and made a roshem, you know, make an impact on the heart, instead it's kasha, it's tough, kitsur hachalamish, like a stone, a major stone on the ground. It's hard. It's very difficult to penetrate. And just because we blow the shofar, which he calls hit orut kala, which is a lightweight kind of awakening, that's not enough to make an impact on something that's absolutely powerful and hard and durable, like a stone, like a strong stone. So you remember what we learned last week was that Rabbi Akiva was watching the water come down and drip on the stone. And he realized that over the course of a long period of time, because of the repetition of the dripping of the stone on the water, ultimately it made a hole in the stone. And hence we have some sort of a spring of water that comes from the stone. So Rabbi Akiva made the jump and he said, well, I'm 40 years old, I never studied Torah, but if I do it drips and drabs, piece by piece, I'm going to be able to soften my heart. And that's what Rabbi Akiva did. He was probably the greatest of all the Tannaim that we have. But in our generation, says Rabbi Yisrael, it's not enough. this constant dropping of water is not going to do it. The lev is mitumtam. It's too hard. It's too tough. And then he goes on and he says in the next line that even to remind a person of the day of his death, which l'chor, that, if anything, should waken up a person, even that doesn't do it. And here you'll see, Rabbi Yisrael, you'll see in footnote number 2, he refers to a Gemara in Masechet Brachos on Daf Hei, and the Gemara says in Brachos that when a person is overcome by his temptations, he's allured by the Yetzer Hara, then he should run to the Beis Medrash and study Torah. If that doesn't work, let him read Kriyat Shema. If that doesn't work, let him remind himself of the day of his death. Says Rabbi Yisrael, even this most extreme method of reminding a person of the day of his death is not going to achieve it. And why isn't it going to achieve it? He says because lo nechrat on the last line miyom amisa. People are not even afraid of the day of their death. That's how he's describing his generation. So we're up on top of page 289. We actually witness people dying. Kamonu. Kamonu means in our age bracket. So you gentlemen are much younger, so you don't see this on a regular basis. But when you get to my age, and certainly 10 or 15 years older than me, this is what you see left and right. They're dying like flies. So doesn't that make an impact on you? Don't you realize? Like, open your eyes and see that death is lurking in the shadows? No. Lo titein oz benafshedu. It doesn't give that power into our soul to do tshuva, to go back to and return to our maker and re-resolve ourselves to do the right thing. And therefore, because of our ribuy avonos, we are so down, you know, laden down with sins, that timtumuously beinu vayikevin, our lave is full of dross and filth, it's hard like a rock, and nothing is making the impact. This is the situation as Rabbi Yisrael describes it, and now Rabbi Yisrael has to come up with some sort of a method. How can we possibly awaken the hearts that are strong, that are durable and hard like a rock, and soften them up so that now we can penetrate into the heart and transform the inner soul of man? And he says the following. Now, what we're seeing here on page 289, you'll see he tells you in footnote 4, is what's called Igeret HaMusar. This was the letter which Rabbi Yisrael published, and it was circulated throughout the Jewish community, in which Rabbi Yisrael lays forth his claim that we need a Musar movement. And he says, he writes to his friends, he writes, "Dear friends, my beloved friends, I want to speak. And you know exactly where I want to take you. And yet, nevertheless, somehow you close your ears. You don't want to hear what I have to say. It goes through one ear," says Rabbi Yisrael, "and comes out the other ear. Please," he begs the people to pay attention. And he knows that we're habituated and almost conditioned, if you will, to close our ears with anything that's related to Yira, to fear of God and Musar. But he's begging us to open up and listen carefully to what he has to say. In the next paragraph that starts with the word hello, he says, "Latet iyun," please, give yourself a focus. Hitboninut. Litbonen means to study something in depth. And take a look at what you'll see in the world. And here again, Rav Yisrael gives what's called a mashal, a metaphor. He says, look at the case of a businessman. He wants to make an investment. He's thinking of a new enterprise, a new investment. So what does he do? He doesn't just invest his money, you know, like a knee-jerk response, you know, impetuously. But first, hitboninut. He reads the, you know, the reports on the stock market. You know, what are the predictions of the future of this investment? He asks his friends. He takes an etza. He takes counsel with those who he trusts, who know something about this business. He looks into the pratim, all the details, and he'll make sure that he's not making a mistake to the best that he's humanly capable of doing so, until finally he decides, yes, it's worth investing. In the study of Torah, as an intellectual pursuit, we do the same thing. We are misbone, meaning we concentrate, we focus, we analyze, we have a question, we have an answer, we try to reveal that which is concealed, we try to create new ideas, we try to answer questions, we don't just jump to any conclusions. But in the next paragraph, when we get to Musar, all of a sudden, when we study Musar, We're not focused. We're not trying to work hard. We're not trying to ask questions and reveal the deeper meanings. We look for ways of getting out of it. And the Yetzer within us is going to sort of torpedo any kind of an effort to really do justice to the agenda or the enterprise of achieving Yira. And therefore, our Musar is not making any impression on us. So what we have to do, he says, is less our kliya moach lazeh. We have to gather together, we have to discipline and energize all the energy forces that we possibly have until we can achieve yaseh roshem, we can make an impact, chazak, a strong and profound impression, belave, on the heart. Our goal is to give oz. Oz means power. And tatsumo. Tatsumo is extra energy. And in doing so, what we have to do is we have to figure out a way of getting down to the nefesh, to the soul, and making an impact on it. And now, Rabbi Yisrael, in his Igeret HaMusar, he lifts up his hand, so to speak, and he says, we're in deep trouble. Ata, at the end of this page, ma lasot, what should we do? How do we achieve our goal? And he gets very poetic here. He says the battlefield is ready. All the forces that are trying to trip us up within us are, how do you say in English, are ambushing, an ambush. The taiva, the desire that's within us, mishotetet. Mishotetet means it's controlling us. Hamidot, and those evil attributes within us are giving us a very emotional power towards evil. And clay milchama ayin, and we don't have weapons. This is the sad situation that we face, says Rabbi Yisrael, in our time. Hayyasa kli, can we create some sort of utensil that will be able to be active and achieve our goal, our desired goal? We cannot rely on anything but the most sophisticated and the most powerful energy forces that we could possibly garnish and gather together, Kliya Mulchama. And these are the weapons of war and what's at stake in this battle? What are we trying to achieve? Yira and Musar. So now we're on the top of page 290. Rabbi Yisrael paints a picture in front of us of a generation that is suffering from timtum ruchani. You know, I often think to myself, if Rabbi Yisrael said that in the year 1840, when there was still a very popular, organized Jewish religious community, imagine what he would say today in the year 2018, where so many of our Jews are so far away. He says, our ears are clogged, our hearts are tough, our minds are confused and muddled, and everything leads us to a state of adishut. For those who are learning Hebrew, that's a great word to learn in modern Hebrew. Adishut means apathy. Kipa'on means frozen. Everything's frozen. And therefore, he says, Rabbi Yisrael, we can't use the normal methods. The normal methodology will simply not do the trick. We need desperately a brand new, powerful weapon that will be noaz meaning it's like chutzpahdik, you know, something that's really radical, that will be able to achieve a roshem chazak balev, make this deep, profound impression on the heart. And here, Rabbi Yisrael says, I think the answer to our problem, and that's the paragraph that starts with Khan, is called on the second line, sa'arat ha-nefesh. So I'd ask you, if you can, to please highlight those two words in the paragraph of Khan on the second line, Sa'arat HaNefesh. Now this phrase, Sa'arat HaNefesh, literally translates is the storm of the soul. Now when you experience a storm, and certainly, you know, a tsunami, or if you go out to the ships and you've seen, maybe you never experienced it, but I'm sure you've seen either movies or famous paintings of storms at sea. A storm is obviously something very, very radical. It's something that completely undoes us. You know, we're no longer standing on solid ground. It has an impact to just shake us up entirely. And that, in a spiritual, emotional level, is called Sa'arat HaNefesh. And here we want to underline four different words that really mean the same thing. But you know, the Hebrew language is very rich in synonyms. Number one, hitrakshut, which is an emotional awakening, a very powerful emotion. Number two, hitpalut. Hitpalut means when I become absolutely amazed at something. Then he has hitorut, to awaken me. And hizdazut means when I'm shooken. I'm shaking, it's shaking me back and forth. This has to be our goal. We have to use whatever means at our disposal to achieve these four descriptions, which are all the same, which really are sarat ha-nefesh. Again, we can't use the normal procedure. You know, it's like someone, chas v'shalom, who's very ill, right? So you can't just give him an antibiotic. You know, you have to give him cortisone, you have to give him intravenous feeding. Who knows what you have to do? It's a very extreme, dangerous situation that we're facing. And the normal methods will not operate. And here, Rabbi Yisrael, in his work, as I told you in his introductory letter to the world about Igeret HaMusar, he uses the most poetic language, which you'll see in bold black letters on the bottom of page 290. This is a quote from Rabbi Yisrael. He says, "Ha'adam ha'chofshi b'dimyono." Man in his... What do you say?
Imagination.
Yeah, now, it's very interesting, because you're right, the translation, our translation of the word dimyon is imagination. Rabbi Yisrael is not using the word in that way. That's why I say, you know, to read Rabbi Yisrael in his original without Dov Katz's help is very challenging, because his poetry uses words in a different context. The word dimyono here in Rabbi Yisrael is reflecting, it reflects the subconscious mind of man, what we called before kochot hakehim. And you'll see this explained in footnote number 6, if you want to just circle number 6 on the bottom. And he says that man sees himself free from the perspective of his kochot kehim. He has freedom. He could do whatever he wants. And that's what natural man wants to do. Natural man does not want to be, he doesn't want to be controlled or disciplined. He wants to be what we would call morally autonomous. He wants to generate his own legislature, and his legislature is very wide, allowing for many different things. Then he says, Asur b'muskalo. Man, as a result of these deeper parts in his essence, in his soul, is asur. Asur means he's incarcerated, he's bound, b'muskalo, meaning his ability to think clearly is somewhat limited. Because dimyono, this concept called the kochos hakeim in his dimyon, molicho, brings him, he walks him, shovev. Shovev means like he's wild, he's rebellious. B'derech lev ritzono, he goes the way his heart wants him to go. Bal yechat, he's not afraid. Me'atid havadai, even from the future which is definite, which is certain. What is the future of man that's certain? Anybody?
Death,
exactly. Eighth, yifkod Hashem, the moment that God will remember us. Al kol mifalav, for any actions that we were guilty of. Ubishvatim kashim yivaser, and with very difficult, very harsh, straps, he will punish us. Bal yilochet zar biglolo, and no one is foreign to being captured by this punishment, and therefore man is guilty, and he will bear responsibility for his sins. And here you have to underline the next few words, because we're going to have a lot to discuss about the next few words. Echad hu osa havera v'anenash, which literally means that one human being, meaning not a divisible two personalities, but rather one personality is the osa havera, he's the one who's guilty of the criminal act, and number two, nenash, and he's punished. Because we're going to see soon that Rabbi Yisrael's analysis of our psychology is what we do is we split the two between two people. And we can't deal with it. We can't think that I am going to be punished for my own actions. So we split it into two personalities. Emir Hashem, we'll get to that in a few minutes. I'm jumping ahead of myself. For anyone who knows me, you could see I'm sort of like, what's the word? I'm overly psyched. What's the word? What's the word when a person is so, he's trying to move at the speed of light. I'm hyperactive because I'm trying to fit in a lot in the short amount of time that we have. Because there are 7 pieces to the puzzle and we're up to the second one, and I really want to do a good job on the second one and be able to finish that up before you have to leave. And he says the following. He says, we got to the point where even death and the fear of death makes no impact on us because of the power of the demyon that wants freedom. So we're not going to accept and recognize and acknowledge the ultimate destiny of man, namely death. We in one part of our psyche, we're denying punishment. We don't want to believe that we'll be punished for our sins. So we rationalize as if we're not going to be punished for our sins. And Hadimyon, he says at the end of this page, Nachal Shotev, you can compare this Dimyon to a river bank that's overflowing, and the water is the current is very powerful. Vasechel, and man's rational ability to try to control this water, Yitba, it drowns in this water. And the only possible way of saving yourself in such a case is Nolichenu Baniya, we have to find some sort of ship that will save us. And what is that ship? How do you identify it? What's going to finally set us straight and give us the ability to realize how serious life is? It's Rigshas HaNefesh V'Saras HaRuach. You remember we spoke about Sa'ara, that man has to awaken himself. Rabbi Yisrael, in another letter in Or Yisrael on page 291, the paragraph that starts Rabbi Yisrael, goes into great detail describing what he calls Sa'arat HaNefesh. Second paragraph, Rabbi Yisrael, you see it? He says, Lehalhiv HaNefashot. Lehalhiv means to get them emotionally excited. And you really have to wake up a person in a very fundamental way, in a very profound way. Bezikuch harayon, which means he has to clarify and purify the idea, the concept, of what Yira is all about, what Musar is all about. And how does he do it? By studying Musar. And here, this is a key phrase, Lilmod Bisfatayim Dolkim. There are 2 different ways you can learn something. One way is to just read it. The other way is Bisfasayim Dolkim, means with lips that scream out, so to speak. So at this point, Rabbi Yisrael advocates that it's not enough that we study Musar, it's not enough that we repeat the Musar over and over again, we have to scream it out. When you scream something out, it makes an impact on your entire body and on your entire soul. And that's going to bring you to the state of Sa'arat HaNefesh. Now, I don't know if, gentlemen, you've ever seen a real Musa yeshiva. Have you ever been? This should be a class trip for us. And we should go visit a real Musa yeshiva. It has at least a half hour a day in which the students learn Musa. And you'll see a very interesting phenomenon. Your people are like getting all excited. You know, they're trembling. That's called Sa'arat HaNefesh. That's all a result of Rabbi Yisrael's program. Now, take a look at the paragraph that starts with the word Khan. Here, Rabbi Yisrael enumerates the various methods to achieve this hitlavut, this excitement, this passion.
Is that like also yearning?
Yearning would be she'ifa. I don't know, did we see that somewhere? No.
No, I think, well, at least when I read Tales of the Baal Shem Tov by Martin Buber, he talks about that concept, and I thought maybe he translates it as yearning, or maybe that's what
I don't know. I could just tell you that Rabbi Yisrael has his own language. You know, as I told you, it's all poetry. Okay. Rabbi Yisrael says hitlavut. Hitlavut means really passionately getting excited about something. He says, number one, shinun, as we saw before, he has to review it. But he says the problem with reviewing something is that it could be yavesh. What does yavesh mean?
Misinterpretation?
No, yavesh means dry. Dry and technical. So you can review something over and over again. It's a great method of memorizing something, but it's still dry. It doesn't have what's called on the third line, hitrag shuta nefesh. It doesn't awaken the passion. The first element in Rabbi Yisrael's program is to choose, and this is a very subjective decision. Each individual has to choose for himself. those ideas that he feels will bring him to Itlavut. This is what Socrates say, know thyself. So you have to know yourself. What ideas will awaken in you those deep, profound ideas, those deep, profound passions? And then, once he chooses those ideas, it might be a text, it might be a sefer, it might be an essay that he read, then he should learn it with the greatest of hitlavut, because he has a spiritual affinity to that book or that essay. And then he should review it time after time again. But the main thing is that each time he reviews it, it's got to be behit palut. He's got to be amazed by it. Now again, each gentleman here in the room has to decide for himself what he read or what he was impressed with that impacted on him. And again, that requires a lot of self, you know, introspection and study. And once you come up with something, then guarantee yourself that every time you read it over and over again, you have a new sense of hitpalut. Hitpalut means a new sense of passionate excitement about it. And after reviewing it so many times, it becomes charut, it's engraved, aluach libenu, on the slate of his soul. Right? It's engraved. And here he quotes in a poetic way, he alludes to a pasuk about tefillin, right? The Torah says the tefillin are on your heart and on your head, right? L'teltefos bein einecha, between your eyes. And he says, gam belechto b'chutz u'b'shal v'al mashkavo, when he's walking outside, and he's or alternatively, he's laying in bed, there's something ringing in his ear. And what's ringing in his ear? He's constantly reviewing the idea that he read out loud with his palus, with excitement, and he read it over and over again, and he'll never forget it. This is Bisfatayim Dolkim. He says it, he screams it out in order to make an impact on himself. Again, a psychological principle. Next, Rabbi Yisrael's number three. He's got to sing it in a nigun. He wants him to sing it. Okay? And he says that we know in psychology that kli shir v'kol zimra, that instruments and music has a tremendous hisorus, a tremendous impact on the soul in one of two ways. Either l'simcha, if it's a happy song, like when I was a kid, I don't know, you probably never heard of Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did. So one of the songs that I like of Simon and Garfunkel, because that's my age, you know, Simon and Garfunkel. I'm dating myself.
Sound of Silence, somebody covered it.
Yeah, Sound of Silence will be more in the second category. I'm in the first category. Oh, Simcha, yeah. There was a song called Feeling Groovy. Okay? I'm not going to sing it for you. Okay, slow down, you move too fast, you gotta make the morning last. Anyway, I used to love their, not only their music, I loved also their lyrics, you know, they were great. You can get this online today, you know, but again, it's from 50 years ago, you know, when I was a kid. Any event, imlituga, tuga means solemnity or seriousness. There are certain songs that by definition, they put the soul into a very serious mood. But you see clearly the impact of music. And therefore, when you learn Musar, he says, it's not enough to review it a million times. It's not enough to read it a million times. You have to, you know, scream it out loud. And not only that, there has to be a certain sing-song. And again, we'll have to take a class trip to see this, but there's a certain special niggun in the Musar yeshivas where they sing Musar. And what this is going to do is it's gradually going to make a penetration and impact. And these Roshems are going to transform the Kochos Keim, which he calls the Dimyono. And all this, he says, is a trufa. This is a healing process that's going to bring about through Sarat HaNefesh a transformation of the soul. And he says, and this is his language, it's about five lines up from the bottom of the page, Kasha Yikra Ha'odom Ma'amori Chazal, when a person will read the statements of Chazal and Sifrei Musa and the works of Musa, Hamalhivim, that awaken the and inspire the hearts of man, Biyiras Hashem, with the fear of God, Bekol, with a voice of Tuga the Etzev. Tuga means, as we said before, solemnity. Etzev means a certain element of despair. V'itpalut ha-nefesh, and this brings about this inspiration that we spoke about. Then as a result, his heart becomes soft and it melts, and he's able to penetrate into his heart. And then he adds another element into the equation. This is the second line before the end of the page. V'yit pa'alu kol chushav. Now the word chush or chushav is in the possessive, but chush is a sensual. There are five senses of man. Those are the five chushim, if you're familiar with that term. And he says that it's very important to get to the point in which you can visualize this. In other words, it's not enough just again to be in the brain as an intellectual mathematical formula, but ultimately you want to get some sort of hamchasha, it's called. Even the modern Hebrew, the Israelis will use the word hamchasha to give it a certain actual taste, or it's tangible, it's real. And now we turn to page 292, and he says the following. How do we get to this level? Number one, if we are able to break out in tears, do you see that on the top of page 292, the word bechi? If his eyes can pour out water, you know, tears, then we know that his whole spirit is being impacted or penetrating with a ruach hadasha. There's some brand new soul or spirit within him. And therefore, he has to get, number one, rayon nachon. He's got to first isolate and identify a concept or as we said before, an essay. He feels that that essay and that idea contained within is nogea, it touches his lave, his heart. And therefore, he, on a very individual level, has to choose which idea speaks to his heart. You'll see that on the third line. He says, "Bechirat harayon netuna biyad kol adam." Each person has to choose for himself which concepts speak to him and impact on him. And that's all based on his inclinations, his personality, his emotional makeup. And ultimately, he says, once you choose that, then you can fight the battle. He quotes a famous Gemara in Masechta Kiddushin, Bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yetzahara, man has a certain inner inclination for evil, but Bara Lo Tavlin, God created an antidote that can overwhelm the Yetzahara. And what is that? That's Torah. Torah itself is called a Tavlin. Says Rabbi Yisrael, what Torah? Is it enough to just learn the Mishnah in Bava Kama, Shoshanogach Sapora, by my ox gored your sheep, and therefore you have to pay damages? That's not enough. We need Yira. We need that part of Torah, which is so profound and so massive, that's called Yira, the study of Yira, of understanding man's makeup and how he can come to the fear of God. Says Rav Yisrael, the most simple, fundamental way of achieving Yira on the basic level, again, there are many, many higher levels, is Yirat HaOnesh, fear of punishment, HaChamur, because punishment is very heavy. And here, Rav Yisrael describes what it means to be punished. And he says that punishment for sin, or for chet and asham, for being guilty, manora chiyuva al ben tmusa, man is mortal, and how horrifying and scarifying is the thought and the notion of punishment. Ki Hashem yavi b'mishpat is called mifal. Anyone who is created and has freedom of will be brought to justice. And at the end of the day, he's quoting a pasuk here at the end of Koheles, Hakol nishma, let's listen to the end. Ki zeh ma'isa kol adam. And therefore, we're all going to be taken on the day of judgment for a punishment. And therefore, he says we have to open our eyes already in this world to the punishments of the eternal world, of the spiritual world. And he says about those punishments, really in truth, ein lanu musag bahem. We have no conception. They're lamala mikol yisrei tevel, that they go even beyond the most horrible suffering in this physical world. But we have never experienced that world of pure spirituality and infinity. Therefore, we have no real concept or perception of what those punishments are all about. And Rav Dov Katz, in his the last paragraph on page 292, says that these descriptions, which Rav Yisrael goes through in great detail of describing what the punishments are going to be like, einam ko ne'imim, they're not so pleasant. These are thoughts that we don't want to really raise. Who wants to think about punishment? Who wants to think about suffering, about divine punishment and anguish? But Rabbi Yisrael's view was, you can't close your eyes from a reality. We have to open our eyes to the reality. And Rabbi Yisrael writes, which you'll see here on the last line on page 292, going on to page 293, that Nidme Le'ish, a man fools himself into thinking that any sorts of punishment is not relevant to him. He separates himself. He makes himself into, psychologically, a split personality. And if you, again, without losing the place on 293, just turn for a moment to 294, because I want to illustrate this. In the paragraph that starts with the word Be'ikar, Rabbi Yisrael emphasizes in that letter that we saw, in which he presents his ideology of Musar, that Echad Hu, Osa Havera Vanenesh, that was on the bottom of page 290. What does Rabbi Yisrael mean when he says the Osaver, the one who perpetuates the criminal act, and the Nenash, the one who's punished, is Echad, it's the same person? And he says the following, that man in his natural state denies the same personality. There's one Ani, one I, which is Todai. Todai means I'm conscious of that. That's the Ani that thinks, that analyzes, that recognizes. But then there's another Ani, there's another I. That's E Todai, that's below the surface, that's a subconscious I. And what man does is, he separates these two personalities. And he says, you know what? On one level, I can recognize the severity of punishment and how heavy our actions are and the repercussions in the world of punishment. But you know what? I have a different Ani, there's a different personality, a different identity, that's my deeper psyche, that's my subconscious I, and Eino Margish Bohem, I don't relate to that. You know, somebody outside of me is going to be punished, but not me, myself. So the basic concept of Musar is to appreciate that Echad Hu Osa Avera V'Nenash, that the one who does and perpetrates the evil is the same person who will suffer the consequences. Don't split yourself into two. That's what Rabbi Yisrael is arguing. And at this point, a person has to be acutely aware of the repercussions of his actions, of the punishment, of death, of suffering, and what goes on beyond death. Now, at this point in time, with your permission, I'd like to take out a book. I photocopied two pages for you of a book called Halachic Man. Are you familiar with this book?
Soloveitchik.
Soloveitchik. This is my Rebbe. I had the schus of learning by him 5 years. And in this book, does everybody have a copy? If not, I have one more copy. Going once, going twice.
I don't do it.
If you want, you can take one.
Just one
of them. Or maybe there's another one there. Anyway, this is an extra copy.
Did you study at YU?
Yes, okay. For many, many years. So now we're looking at page, what is it, 74, correct? Now, if you don't mind, again, it's a little bit tedious, but I'd like to read this together with you. He says the following. Now, just a little bit background, because we're up to page 74. So what happened in the first 73 pages? So one of the main motifs of this work is that halachic man hates the concept of death to the extent to which he stays away from death. He doesn't want to hear about death. He says that the great halachic men throughout the centuries would not visit cemeteries, that if a person has contact with the dead, that's called tumah. It corrupts and it contaminates. We only do it when we have to. But other than that, we don't visit cemeteries. I know people who spend lots and lots of time visiting cemeteries.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know.
Anyway, so he says that the halachic man, that genuine personality of a great person is absolutely, how should I say, finds death or any concept of death, any connection with death, antithetical. It would seem to me that this world perspective was the primary factor in the refusal on the part of such halachic giants, I added that word, such as Reb Chaim of Brisk, that's my Rebbe's grandfather, Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, the Netziv, and such like, and other people, to admit the Musa program of Yisrael Salanter into the Yeshiva Volozhin. Now you have to understand the history here. Volozhin is the greatest yeshiva in its time, in all of Lithuania. Any yeshiva that you've ever heard of in the Lithuanian world comes from, is a child, so to speak, of Volozhin. And they would not admit into Volozhin, the program of Yisrael. So Rav Soloveitchik asks why. Why were they opposed to Rav Yisrael Salanter and his program? Says Rav Soloveitchik, this movement, the movement of Musa, at the beginning of its growth, symbolized the world perspective of the universal homo religioso. This homo religioso has to do with Christianity. In Christianity, there's a lot of talk about death and the fear of death. This is a perspective directed towards the transcendent. In other words, it doesn't belong to this world. Think more about the world to come, toward the existence lying beyond the realm of concrete reality. Emotions like fear, lowliness, melancholy, self-negation, constant self-appraisal, consciousness of sin, self-lacerating torments, etc., etc. These constituted the primary features of the movement's spiritual profile in its early years. And listen to what he tells us. It was a practice in Kovna and Slabodka. These are two major centers of Musa. To spend the twilight hour when Shabbos was drawing to a close in an atmosphere suffused with sadness and grief, an atmosphere in which man lost his spiritual shield, his sense of power, of confidence, his strength. He becomes utterly sensitive. Sensitive means like mushy, responsive. And there to engage in a monologue about death, about the nihility of this world, its emptiness and its ugliness. The halakhic men sense that this mood possessed a profound contradiction to halacha and would undermine its very foundations. Halakhic man fears nothing. He swims in the sea of the Talmud, that life-giving sea to all living. If a person has sinned, then the halacha of repentance will come to his aid. He should not waste time on spiritual self-appraisal, on probing introspections, on picking away at the sense of sin, and certainly not on the fear of death. Such a psychic analysis brings man neither to fear nor to love of God, but most fundamental of all, not to the knowledge and cognition of the Torah. The Torah cannot be acquired in a state of melancholy and depression. Man's entire psychic being must be committed to the regime of the cognition of halacha, to understand and analyze halacha. And it's through such service, meaning the dedication to the understanding of halacha on the deepest level, that man is saved from experiencing despair. He's in a state of joy and happiness. But emotions of fear and anxiety, if they're not rooted in halacha, will give rise to destructive consequences that will by far outweigh any positive gains. So Rabbi Yitzhak Blaser, I think I told you about him, he was the primary disciple of Rabbi Yisrael, and the second volume of Rav Dov Katz is dedicated to him. He was from Petterburg, he was called Rabbi Yitzhak of Petterburg. He approached Rav Chaim of Brisk when Rav Chaim became a Rosh Hashiva in Volozhin, and he tried to persuade Rav Chaim and the heads of the yeshiva to introduce the study of Musar into their academy. And Rav Blaser, in support of his position, cited the statement, this is what we started with tonight, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Hey, a man should always incite the good impulse to fight against the impulse. If he subdues it, well. If not, let him study the Torah. If he subdues it, that's good. But if not, let him remind himself of the day of death. And Rav Blaser said, evidently, the Chazal understood that they preferred the effectiveness of the remembrance of death to the study of Torah. Because it seems clearly that if the study of Torah did not succeed, then you need a more powerful and more profound impact of reminding yourself to death. So Reb Chaim answered him, if a person is sick, we prescribe castor oil for him. Now, today nobody drinks castor oil. But back in the day, when a person had stomach issues, he had to take a certain dosage of castor oil. However, it is absolutely certain that a healthy person, if he ingests castor oil, will become very sick. He says, if that vile wretch, which is the evil impulse, meets you, and if you are sound in spirit and soul, if your consciousness and character are whole and intact, meaning you're healthy, occupy yourself with the study of Torah. Drag this wretch into the house of study. This is the most effective and tried remedy in man's ongoing battle with his evil impulse. However, if you're a spiritually sick person, If a fit of madness has seized hold of you, here Rav Chaim is referring to a Gemara that ein adam chote elokim nichnas bo ruach shtus. A person who sins is because he's got a seizure of madness. If some psychic anomaly of sickness, right, an aberration, has put forth its disease tendrils in your inner world, then you must resort to more powerful drugs. Then maybe you want to take castor oil, and then you remind yourself of the day of death. But we in Valojin, says Reb Chaim on page 26, thank God, are healthy in spirit and in body. We are whole in our Torah. We are healthy. There's no need for castor oil. If the scholars of Kelm and Kovna feel compelled to drink bitter drugs, let them drink it to their heart's content. But let them not invite others to dine with them. But in all truth and fairness, this is like the postscript, you know, P.S. Yeah. It should be emphasized that when the Musav movement reached a state of maturity in the yeshiva Knesset Yisrael, this was in a city called Slobodka, under the directorship of Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel. He was called the Alter of Slobodka. He was the Mashgiach in Slobodka. And in the Mir Yeshiva under Rabbi Yerucham Levovitz, the Muslim movement assumed an entirely different form and approached the world perspective, was similar to the world perspective of the great halachic men. Fear, terror, melancholy was all replaced by a powerful sense of holiness, self-confidence, and the joy of life. The act of cognition in accordance with halacha, coming up with new original halachic insights, spiritual creation, all replace the exaggerated sensitivity and impressionability, that despairing perspective that had first taken hold of the world at the time initially of the Musav movement. So if you put this on the side, my friends, this is a fantastic piece of history. And what's important for us is to realize that what we're reading here about Rabbi Yisrael is that Rabbi Yisrael's response to Rabbi Chaim would have been what?
That they're sick.
Exactly. That our generation is very sick. And you guys in Brisk, okay, you're wholesome and you're healthy and you're dedicated to cognition and to analyzing halacha 24/7. You reign supreme. You're full of joy and self-confidence in your creative powers, your insights into Torah. You're being mechadish chidush. That's all wonderful. But that's not typical of the generation that we live in. Our generation, as we saw at the beginning of this chapter, is nagua, is suffering from spiritual maladies. It's got timtum alev. You remember that concept where the heart is hard like a like a rock. Nothing seems to penetrate into our souls. We are totally distracted, totally dedicated to the world as it exists, the material physical world, trying to eke out a living. And our spiritual batteries are very low. And therefore we need a very powerful shot in the arm. And if it means that we have to be aware of the repercussions of our actions, that man is mortal, he's flesh and blood, he will die, he will suffer spiritually with tremendous, incredibly powerful suffering punishment, that's what we have to open up our eyes. And we have to be aware of that. Hence, the Musav movement in its original form, under the guidance of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, took on a very specific kind of form and a shape and a methodology which is antithetical to Rabbi Chaim Brisker's philosophy on what halacha is all about. But, my friends, and I think we're getting, you know, the clock is our worst enemy, but I'm going to try to add another 5 minutes. If you have to go, you have to go. If you take a look on page 293... in the paragraph that starts the Yesh, so Rabbi Yisrael pointed out that to the same extent that we emphasize in our Musa methodology descriptions of punishment for those who violate the will of God in order to penetrate Yiras Hashem and fear of criminal acts, we also have to look at the other side of the coin. What's the other side of the coin? What's the other side, the flip side of punishment?
Reward.
Let's look at the reward. We have to describe in great detail the reward that's set aside for us if we fulfill the will of God. And this will engender and penetrate within us the love for mitzvahs. And he says, in the case of describing reward, this is going to give us a sense of simcha, of happiness, when we you know, we gas ourselves up for the challenge and the agenda of achieving spiritual heights and fulfilling the will of God the way it was meant to be, this will bring us to a state of simcha because we realize the infinite rewards that God is going to grant us. And that's a tremendous sense of simcha. And in fact, you remember we said before that Rabbi Yisrael wants to get the five senses involved, meaning we have to picture things in our mind. Rabbi Yisrael tried in his public lectures to give us a real sense of what rewards are going to be like, of what infinity is all about. And we'll end with a footnote here on page 295, footnote number 24. No, sorry, that's not the one I'm looking for. One second, maybe it is, maybe it's not. Sorry, I didn't check it off because this is not my safe. So I don't want to make notations in it. Just one second. Oh yeah, number 21. Yeah, footnote number 21. So there's a sefer called Shaarei Tzion, which quotes Rabbi Yisrael. And Rabbi Yisrael tried to give the people a concept of what infinity is like. I find this a little bit childish, but it's interesting because, you know, Rabbi Yisrael is talking to the Amcha, to, you know, the rank and file citizen, and he has to describe to them what infinity is like. So he says to them the following: Ilu, if we could only fill up a house full of gargire pereg, what's it called in English? Those little black things.
Poppy seeds.
Poppy seeds, excellent. So imagine filling up an entire building with poppy seeds. And every million years, a bird comes and takes away one poppy seed. How long would it take until all the poppy seeds are removed from this gigantic building? Now, if you probably in a handful, I don't know how many poppy seeds would it be in a handful. It's like sand on the ground, right? Probably have a couple hundred thousand. So imagine once every million years a bird comes along and takes. Well, I find this very cute. It's like amusing to me because it's an analogy because you begin to get the concept of infinity. Okay, my friends, it's late. I think we've covered most of what I had prepared for you for tonight. We didn't exactly finish. He's going to talk about the Musa methodology in terms of men, women, and children. In other words, he doesn't want to exclude the women folk from this. He's going to talk about spirituality and infinity. And this, if you could make a note of it, what we're up to is page 293. So I might forget, so if you could remind me, let's make up, if it works out for everyone here, that we get together again a week from tonight on Monday at 5:30. Is that okay? And what I'm going to do for you, and again, if you want to do it in advance, you can certainly do it. Just leave me a copy of the book. Is to photocopy Perek 21, which is his next Perek. And that's Tochnit HaBitzua Shalimud HaMusar. What was the actual program that Rabbi Yisrael wanted in order to study Musar? How is it meant to be studied? And we're gonna see that there's a contrast between the way Rabbi Yisrael thought we could set up what's called a Beis HaMusar as opposed to the Hasidic approach. And we're going to talk about which parts of Shulchan Aruch we should emphasize and we should study.
There's a Hasidic approach to Musar?
No, the Hasidic approach to what's called a Beit Hasidut, meaning the Chatzer, you know, the Rebbe. The Rebbe has his, I don't know how you say it in English, you know, his...
Like instilling midot, sorry?
No. The Rebbe has his Chatzer. Chatzer is a literally a yard, but I don't mean a yard, it means,
court.
His court, excellent. So what were the Hasidic courts and what were their goals? And what was the Musar court, which means the Beit HaMusar? I don't know if you know this, but to this day here in Yerushalayim there's a place called the Beit HaMusar, and it was established by one of the great Musar philosophers of the last generation. In any event, that's going to be for chapter 21. So if there's anyone who would be, again, I'm not trying to elicit but maybe I am, I elicit your help here because the photocopying is taking a lot of my time. If anyone could just photocopy these pages from, let's say, 297 until 308, or 309, and just make, double-sided and make five copies, that would be a help for me. You know, so I'll leave the book here if you have the time, if not now, another time, and just make sure to leave the book for me because I got to prepare this for next week.
I can do it tomorrow.
Okay, if you have any, even 5 minutes tomorrow, it would take a headache off my head, that's what we can do.
The Brewsters come up with all those jokes about Helm. That's what I'm.
Helm is a little different. Helm is more about like silly kind of behavior patterns.
It sounds like they were saying we're great here in Brisk. And
right.
Is Kelm different than Helm? I thought there were
no two different two. Different. Don't confuse Kelm and Helm. Okay. No. Helm is for people who are a little bit weird.
I heard there are a lot of Brits.
You know, you get to the point where you live in Israel for such a long time, you forget translations. Like, you know, Perig, I can tell you what Perig is, but I don't know the English translation. It's been a while. Poppy seeds. So, Rabosai, make sure you have a bird wherever you're living that will come once in a million years and take away one poppy seed. Very cute.
Thank you.
Wishing you all a great week. Thanks.
Thanks.